Surananandanam Rajajanarandanam Yamunate Ravamchari Jayarama Gopi jana bala vagini vanadare Yasura nandana braja jana ranjana Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Lila Pravista Astakara Satasisi Manas Divine Grace and C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jai. Prem Sakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Siyadvaita Gadara Shivasti Gaudu Vakti. Jai. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Kopa Gopina Shama Kunda Radhakundi Gila Govardhan Ki Jai. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Sita Devi Ki Jai. Sri Janamamata Ki Jai. Sri Maru Pandit Ki Jai. Gaudu Vakti. All glories to the Ashtama Devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the Lord Sri 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 Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, seventh chapter, verses 40-42. We're bringing in some Nisringa Katha on Hiranyakasipu. We're speaking about Janava Mata and Maru Pandit. Get comfortable. So we'll begin with the history of Hiranyakasipu as we're leading up to Nisringa Chaturdasi next week. As described in this chapter, this is the chapter entitled Hiranyakasipu, King of the Demons in the seventh canto. After the annihilation of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha's sons and his brother Hiranyakasipu were very much aggrieved. Hiranyakasipu reacted very sinfully by trying to diminish the religious activities of people in general. He began to agitate all the demons and rakshasas to disturb the ritualistic ceremonies of the peaceful sages and other inhabitants of earth. For want of the performance of yajna sacrifice, the demigods began wandering unseen on the earth planet. After finishing the ritualistic funeral ceremonies for his brother, Hiranyakasipu began to speak to his nephews, quoting from the Shastras about the truth of life. This was the purpose of pacifying them. He spoke as follows: "My dear nephews, for heroes to die before the enemy is glorious. According to their different fruitive activities, living entities come together within this material world and are again separated by the laws of nature. We should always know, however, that the spirit soul, which is different from the body, is eternal, inadjustable, pure, all-pervading, and aware of everything. When bound by the material energy, the soul takes birth in higher or lower species of life according to varying association, and in this way receives various types of bodies in which to suffer and enjoy. One's affliction by the conditions of material existence is a cause of happiness and distress. There is no other cause, and one should not be aggrieved upon seeing the superficial actions of karma." It's amazing he could say this and then 10 minutes later completely forget it and go about killing everything. Thus, Hiranyakasipu pacified his nephews and other relatives and relieved them of their lamentation. Having been pacified, Diti and Rushabhanu, Hiranyakasipu's mother and sister-in-law, engaged their minds in spiritual understanding. Hiranyakasipu's plan to become immortal. This chapter describes how Hiranyakasipu performed a severe type of austerity for material benefit, thus causing great distress throughout the universe. Even Lord Brahma, the chief personality within this universe, became somewhat disturbed and personally went to see why Hiranyakasipu was engaged in such a severe austerity. The answer was simple. Hiranyakasipu wanted to become immortal. He wanted to not be conquered by anyone, not be attacked by old age and disease, and not be harassed by any opponent. Thus, he seemed to have forgotten everything he'd been teaching at the death of his brother. Upon hearing about the purpose of Hiranyakasipu's austere meditation, Lord Brahma, accompanied by the great sage Bhrigu and the great personalities like Daksha, went to see Hiranyakasipu. He then sprinkled water from his Kamadhenu on a type of water pot upon Hiranyakasipu's head. Hiranyakasipu, the king of the Daityas, bowed down before Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, offering respectful obeisances again and again and offering prayers. When Lord Brahma agreed to give him the benedictions, he prayed not to be killed by any living entity, not to be killed in any place, covered or uncovered, not to die in the daytime or the nighttime, not to be killed by any weapon on the land or the air, and not to be killed by any human being, any animal, any demigod, or any other living entity, living or non-living. He further prayed for supremacy over the entire universe and requested the 8 yogic professions, such as anima and legima. Lord Brahma, as we know, gave this benediction in one lecture. Prabhupada tells how after killing Hiranyakasipu, Nrsimhadeva chastised Lord Brahma. He said, "You gave him so many benedictions, I had to really, to use the phrase, think outside of the box to kill this demon. So don't do this again." So this is why Hiranyakasipu is the only demon to ever get that benediction. Anyway, and then finally, Hiranyakasipu terrorizes the universe. After he received these benedictions, his body, which had been almost consumed entirely, was revived with full beauty and luster like gold. Nonetheless, he continued to be envious of Lord Vishnu, unable to forget Lord Vishnu having killed his brother. Hiranyakasipu conquered everyone in the 10 directions and the 3 worlds and brought all living entities, both demigods and asuras, under his control, becoming the master of all places, including the residents of Indra, whom he had driven out. He began enjoying life in great luxury and thus became mad. All the demigods, but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva came under his control and began serving him. But despite all of his material power, he was dissatisfied because he was always puffed up, proud of transgressing the Vedic rituals and regulations. All the Brahmanas were dissatisfied with him, and they cursed him with determination. Not just cursed him, but cursed him with determination. Eventually, all the living entities within the universe, represented by the demigods and sages, prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakasipu's rule. Lord Vishnu informed the demigods that they and the other living entities would be saved from the fearful conditions created by Hiranyakasipu. Since Hiranyakasipu was the oppressor of all the demigods, the followers of the Vedas, the cows, the brahmanas, and the religious saintly persons, and since he was envious of the Supreme Lord, he would naturally be killed very soon. Hiranyakasipu's last exploit would be the torment of his own son Prahlad, who was a Mahabhagavata, an exalted Vaishnava. This would thus end his life. So we move on to today's verses. We have three verses. I'm simply going to chant the Sanskrit in them and go on to the translations and purports and then other topics that we're discussing today. So Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, seventh chapter, verse 40. Etan me prichita prashan hare karma vivichaya bruhi me jnanamitravad ajaya nashtachakshusha. 41. Sarve Vedas Chayagnas Cha Tapo Danani Chanagha Jiva Baya Pradanasya Na Kuruvan Kapam Api. And 43. Sri Sukha Uvacha Sa Itam Aprishta Purana Kalpa Kuru Pradanena Muni Pradana Pravridha Harsho Bhagavat Katayam Sancho Ditas Tam Prahashan Ivaha. Translation to verse 41. My dear sage, I have put all these questions before you with a view to knowing the pastimes of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the friend of all, so kindly describe them for those who have lost their vision. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura put forth many varieties of questions with a view to the understanding of the principles of transcendental loving service to the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, verse 41, devotional service to the Lord is one, and the mind of the devotee is not diverted to the many branches of uncertainties. Vidura's purpose was to be situated in that service to the Lord, wherein one merges undivertedly. He claimed the friendship of Maitreya Muni, not because he was Maitreya's son, but because Maitreya was actually the friend of all who had lost their spiritual vision due to material influence. Verse 41, translation. O spotless one, your answers to all these questions will grant immunity from all material miseries. Such charity is greater than all the Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, and austerities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The highest perfectional work of charity is to give people in general immunity from the anxieties of material existence. This can be done only by performing activities in devotional service to the Lord. Such performance of sacrifice, distribution of munificent charities altogether cannot form even a part of the immunity from the pangs of material existence that is gained through devotional service. The charity of Maitreya would help not only Vidura, but due to its universal nature, would deliver all others in all times. Thus, Maitreya is immortal. Translation and purport to verse 42. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, thus, the chief of the sages, who was always enthusiastic about describing topics regarding the personality of Godhead, began to narrate the descriptive explanations of the Puranas, being so infused by Vidura. He was very much enlivened by speaking on the transcendental activities of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Great learned sages like Maitreya Muni are always very enthusiastic about describing the transcendental activities of the Lord. Maitreya Muni, being thus invited by Vidura to speak, appeared to be smiling, because he actually felt transcendental bliss. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Further Inquiries by Vidura. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yunatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Vinikarino Vancha kapatudibhyascha kripa sindhu bahe bacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss, because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the description, Sanatana Goswami describes himself as like a dwarf trying to capture the moon. So to cover the topics before us today, truly I do feel like a dwarf trying to capture the moon, especially when we have a clock right there in our vision. So we'll make some effort here. In this verse number 40, the first verse of today, Prabhupada makes a very important point. The questions that are put forth from Vidura, they're not on random topics. They're not just, you know, any particular subject matter. But they are very specifically spoken and inquired about for the principles of understanding the transcendental loving service to the Lord. This in itself is essential for the living entity in this material world. The understanding of how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, this is there even in the animal species, is very easily obtained, nothing particular there. But here, the inquiries by sages to other sages, great Mahabhagavatas, are always on the subject of how to engage in the loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, very importantly, we have this guideline from Prabhupada here in this particular purport, that the mind should not be diverted by the many branches of uncertainties. This is how he says it. Many branches of the Vedas. You know this famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada refers to here. As a devotee, we're meant to be focused, we're meant to be fixed in a mental state that allows us to be comfortably and practically situated in the process of devotional service. Why? This is because our goal should be like Vidura's goal, and that is singularly to be situated in that service. If our mind is diverted by so many other different thoughts and different ideas and different pursuits, then the single pointed devotional service to the Lord cannot be possible. Now, the opportunity to do that while still executing our regular dharmic responsibilities and duties may seem like a challenge. And it is. It is a challenge. But that is what the instructions of the sages are for. That is what the association of the sages are for. That is what our goal in this life is, to execute our duties according to our responsibilities, but at the same time to be singularly focused on relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this relationship is not hampered. Ahoitakya pratiyata. There's no restrictions that, oh, you can only have this if you're a completely self-surrendered, pure devotee of the Lord. You can only have this if you're a Mahabhagavata living in the forest. You can only have, so on and so on and so on. There's no only. Devotional service, pure devotional service, the focus of serving the Supreme Personality of God is open to everyone in every situation. Just as Mahaprabhu says about the chanting of the holy name, there's no restrictions. There's no rules and regulations. So the understanding of how to fix ourselves in this process of devotional service is what Vidura is inquiring about. And we move on to the second verse here, and we find an even more subtle reason why Vidura is asking these questions. Something that may not look like pure devotional service externally, but it aids in the execution of pure devotional service. And that is, namely, the result of Maitreya's response. That he answered the answers to all the questions Vidura is putting before him will give immunity from all material miseries. Now, this material world, Bhukala Gama Shashvatam, is a place full of difficulties, all kinds of miseries, all kinds of disturbances. But by hearing the answers of the great sages to the questions put forth in Bhagavatam, all material miseries will be relieved. And this is a very important thing. This is not mundane. Because as a devotee executing devotional service, we want to be free from difficulties. If the difficulties come, we'll embrace them and continue our service. But to not have those difficulties is a very great blessing. Now then, after saying this, Prabhupada makes a very bold statement. The highest perfectional work of charity is to give people in general immunity from the anxieties of material existence. This is really, really very, very essential. Not social assistance programs, not material relief from, you know, just mundane things. These are all well and good. They have their place, this type of charity. But the relief from material anxieties for the purpose of executing devotional service. And these sages here, they answer these questions put before them, and these answers are that real welfare work. Because their answers are meant to alleviate birth, death, old age, and disease. The suffering of the living entity, they may be suffering due to war, due to famine, due to so many diseases, but the real suffering of the living entity is birth, death, old age, and disease. And to get free from birth, death, old age, and disease is given by hearing the instructions, the answers that great Mahabhagavatas like Maitreya make to the inquiries on the path of devotional service. So this is why it's considered to be the greatest welfare work. More so than any other type of charitable activity, this spreading of Krishna consciousness, this answering questions on the real goal of life, the establishing of devotional service, is the highest welfare work. And in the last line of this purport, very interesting, it notes that the eternal benefit is given in such answers. Eternal benefit. Now, we may seek benefit, you know, I have, you know, we have regular responsibilities, payments that are due, bills that have to be paid, and so we take care of satisfying those and we get some relief from it, but then we turn right around next month and the same bills are there, the same responsibilities are there. We may want to, what's that they say, not such a suitable, but at any rate, they say if you give a man, if you happen to be of this class of people, you give a man a fish, he'll be satisfied for a day. You teach him to fish, he'll be satisfied for his life. So not that we're promoting eating a fish, but the point being that by teaching someone something beyond their immediate needs, they will get long-term benefit. So these instructions here, they bring eternal benefit. They allow the living entity to situate themselves in the path of devotional service, which will give them the greatest benefit. This extends beyond any type of circumstance, any type of reoccurring difficulties, because it deals with the nature of the soul. It deals with our eternal relationship with Krishna, which is outside the realm of this body. This means an understanding done that the work done, understanding that what's done on the path of devotional service is not of this limited temporary world, but connects us purely to the spiritual world. And this is a very important point, because we've all got different responsibilities we have to engage in this life. But those activities engaged in the process of devotional service aren't of this temporary world. They don't have anything to do with our existence here. They allow us to eternally be connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through that process of devotional service. And then in the third verse here, there is a very important quality of a speaker of the Bhagavatam noted. Sando sanchotita pahashant eva aha. Being so infused by the topic, with smiles, they reply. In other words, be happy. Be ecstatic in devotional service. Maitreya was very enthusiastic to speak about the topics being put before him by Vidura. A devotee should always grasp the chance to speak about the pastimes of the Lord, about the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees, about the activities of devotional service, and should enthusiastically share those topics whenever the opportunity is there. This is the nature of being in touch with devotional service. Because devotional service is not mundane, it's not boring, it's not dull. It's enlightening. It's purely spiritual. Now, Sukadeva Goswami, in the description given here of Maitreya's mood, says in the final sentence of this chapter, he was very much enlivened by speaking on the transcendental activities of the Lord. This is a very apt description, because the point being made is that both the hearer and the speaker should be enlivened, should be happy, should be enthusiastic in the discussions on the subject of the Bhagavad. When we get the opportunity to talk about the philosophical instructions given by these Mahabhagavatas throughout the entire Bhagavatam, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, the Ishopanishad, whatever the Shastra we're reading is, we should be enthusiastic. Srila Prabhupada was enthusiastic in writing them, speaking them. How else is it possible that he could go with practically no sleep and yet at the same time give such concise, intelligent, connected instructions? Imagine, you know, any of us going day in and day out with 2, maybe 3 hours of sleep, and then someone wants to talk to us about some deep philosophy. We tend to be a little bit dull. If we don't get good night's sleep one night, the next day we're like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night. I just want to go take a nap. You know, what to speak of subsist on 2 or 3 hours of sleep and still speak such incredible philosophy. This was because Srila Prabhupada was enthusiastic in speaking about devotional service. In one lecture, Prabhupada said, a devotee should be happy in executing their devotional service. Otherwise, they're not a devotee. Now, that's a pretty bold statement. Unless we're happy in executing devotional service, we're not really a devotee. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the instruction of Nityananda. This is the example of all the acharyas that we see. They're always very happy to render devotional service. Yeah, I guess I'll dress the deities today. All right, let's go to kirtan. Jeez, I got to go over there and speak about the Bhagavatam. No, that's not our mood. Nobody talks like that. Today's my day to dress the Lord. I have such wonderful flowers. Oh, the kirtan's going to be great. Adi Karna's just going to knock it out of the park. Oh, wonderful. So many subjects to cover in the Bhagavatam class. This is the mood when we talk about devotional service. We should be enthusiastic. We should be happy. So this is the goal of every practicing devotee. And from the final sentence in Prabhupada's purport to this chapter, he makes it very clear. Maitreya Muni, being thus invited by Vidura to speak, appeared to be smiling because he was actually in transcendental bliss. So, as we say, we should feel the bliss. We should feel the ecstasy when we're engaging in devotional service. We should understand that if we're feeling morose, if we're feeling mental, if we're feeling distracted, we haven't embraced the topic of the Bhagavatam. These three verses specifically give us that understanding. Connecting with devotional service is not a mundane thing. It will give us the benefit of being relieved of mundane miseries, and we should be happy and enthusiastic when doing it. This is the conclusion of the words of this particular chapter of the Bhagavatam. Now today we've been asked to speak about two devotees that are very important in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The first of them is Madhu Pandit. We have a few words about Madhu Pandit because that's all there really is about Madhu Pandit, is a few words. It's interesting, there are some associates of the Lord that play very important roles in different activities, but at the same time, there's not much biographical information there. Madhu Pandit is one of these devotees. Actually, Madhu Pandit, for all practical purposes, is not even mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's one verse that mentions him, in which it states that Sri Madhu Pandit, whose characteristics are all very wonderful, was with the assembled devotees. Now, if we had that one sentence about our own activities mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'd all be very, very happy. Or whoever it is going to write the future Chaitanya Charitamrita of ISKCON. Of course, it'll be called something different. But the point being that this is sufficient in and of itself. But mostly what we know about Madhu Pandit comes from the Bhakti Ratnakara. And this is where mostly the description of his connection with the deity of Gopinath is found. Now, we all know that Brajanab, the great grandson of Krishna, arranged for different deities. He arranged for three particular deities of Krishna to be carved. He never saw Krishna himself. Brajanab never saw Krishna directly. So the carvings of these deities were done under the descriptions given to him by Uttara, Mother Maharaj Cricket. So he had three different images in this regards carved. None of them were exactly perfect by anyone's expectations. Govindaji resembled the face of Krishna itself. Madan Mohan resembled Krishna from the navel down to the lotus feet. And Gopinath resembled Krishna from the navel to the neck. This is the description given there. These deities were installed and arranged by Brajanab for their worship, and then, of course, long, long, long history, years and decades and go by, and the deities all become scattered due to different invasions and situations like this. Many of the Vrindavan deities were transported to Radhakund and placed in the bottom of Radhakund for safekeeping. And even with that, the invaders were getting rumors that maybe their deities that they were looking to destroy were in Radhakund. So even from Radhakund, these deities had to be removed. Many of them went to Jaipur under the tutelage and protection and caretaking of the emperors there. So after all of this time, then we come to Mahaprabhu's time where he's trying to resurrect many of these different places. And there's one devotee named Paramananda Bhattacharya. And he discovered this deity of Gopinath in Vamsipat. And he entrusted the worship of this deity to his friend and fellow godbrother, Madhu Pandit. They were both disciples of Gadadhar Pandit. And Gadadhar Pandit, of course, as we all know, was one of the most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Paramananda found the deity and he trusted deity to Madhu Pandit to take care of this deity. And Madhu Pandit had many, many wonderful services as Lord. One particular service is he would read Srimad Bhagavatam every day in front of Gopinath. Every day he would study the Bhagavatam like this. This is Prabhupada's program for us as well. Now, interestingly enough, since we're also celebrating the life of Janava Mata, there's an amazing story about her in connection with this deity of Gopinath. She, of course, Janava Mata is the wife of Nityananda, and she had come to Vrindavan. And she was attending the evening arti at Radha Gopinath temple. Suddenly, Gopinath himself got down off the altar. Actually, the phrase used in Bhakti Ranakar is jumped. So I guess it would be a jump. I mean, if we were to assume that we could see Shyam Sundar come down off the altar, any of us that have done service and have had to come down, you realize it's kind of a little jump. So Gopinath jumped off the altar, took Janava Mata, who was in the darshan hall, by the hand, brought her onto the altar, closed the curtains. When the pujaris reopened the curtains, Janabhamata was gone. So it was understood that she had taken her place in the form of Gopinath. So they installed at that time, or shortly thereafter, they installed the deity of Ananga Manjari, who Janabhamata is an incarnation of, according to Gaura-Gaura Nidesha Deepika, as well as the deity of Radharani. So Gopinath has the two consorts there, one on one side, one on the other, Radharani and Ananga Manjari. So this is the little bit of history of the story. Now, to use our modern day language, we could say that Madhupandit was a bit of a fashionista. Not in the egotistical sense, but he had a very unique jacket. It was a long knee-length jacket, entirely made out of tulsi beads. And a nice little hat. Sometimes you'll see during the cooler season, Sesha has this little hat that he wears. It's a little, kind of a roundish, like almost a can-shaped. And he had a hat made out of tulsi, same style as that. Now these two items, they are in the Gopinath temple in Jaipur. Previously, they were in a alcove with a glass window in front of it that was directly in the sunlight. And they were like that for decades upon decades upon decades upon decades upon probably hundreds of years. And of course, anybody that knows anything about keeping artifacts, the last thing you do is keep them in the sunlight. So His Holiness Indradumna Swami made arrangements with that temple that the items would be taken out, would be properly cleaned, put into a controlled air glass case in a little room, so to speak, off to the side of the deity area, with a plaque signifying what they were and a nice painting of Madhupandit worshiping Gopinath. Very, very well. So if you get to go to Jaipur, you go to the Gopinath temple. Actually, if you go to the Gopinath temple, you'll get two great fortunes. One is to hear the local ladies sing bhajans, which is just amazing, absolutely incredible. And the other is to be able to have the darshan of this tulsi jacket and cap that were worn by Madhupandit. Now, one other connection is that when Jiva Goswami arranged for Narottam, Shamananda, and Srinivas to leave and go to Bengal, also connecting the dots at the request of Janabhamata, with all of the copies of books, the garland from Gopinath was taken by Madhupandit and given to them as a blessing for their journey. So not so much information there, but very, very wonderful pastimes with Madhupandit. And now Janabhamata, it is a next to impossible task to speak of her grace in anything less than hours. But as we don't have hours, we'll just take a few details about her life. Balaram had two wives, Varuni and Revati, and they became, according to Gaura-Gaura Nidesha Deepika, Vasudha and Janava, the two wives of Lord Nityananda in Chaitanya Lila. They were the daughters of Surya Sharakela Krishnadas, and they were both as effulgent as the sun. Gaura-Gaura Nidesha Deepika notes that they were both incarnations of Varuni and Revati, and Janava was an incarnation of Ananga Manjari. And Kavi Karnapur himself points out that this is possible because there are many personalities in Gaura-Lila that are multiple individuals in the same form. Of course, in our modern times, if this happens, we call this person crazy and give them their own place to stay. Several personalities in the same body. But in the spiritual sense, different spiritual personalities can come together in one form. So Janava's father, as I mentioned, was Suryadas, and the mother was Bhadravati. And Suryadas was the third son of Kamsari Mishra. And Kamsari Mishra's family was really quite amazing. There was Damodar and Jagannath were the younger brothers of Surya, and the older brothers were Gauridas, Krishnadas, and Nrisinga Chaitanya. So all of these personalities, any of you that are familiar with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, particularly the Adi Lila chapter 10, you know these are all very, very important, significant personalities in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So very, very significant family. So Suryadas held the position of kind of like a king. He was a zamindar, as we know the phrase from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was entrusted with collecting the taxes. And we see a lot of these Gora Vaishnavas from this period were engaged in services of the different kings at that time. And because of this, he was very, very wealthy. He had a very good salary. And they were all, despite this very opulent lifestyle that they would lead, Suryadas and his collection of brothers and their children and all, they were all of spotless character. And Bhakti Ratnakar says the virtues of Surya or Suryadas are innumerable to mention. Now, without the mercy of Lord Nityananda's energy, Janava Mata, it says no one is able to cross the ocean of material life, nor can anyone obtain the service to Lord Nityananda, nor enter into the loving service of Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. So this is a very important point being made in Bhakti Ratnakar, that we have to understand the significance of getting the mercy of Janava Mata. She had such a prominent role in the Gaudiya community at that time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written one very nice prayer to Janava Mata in his Kalyana Kalpataru. O Janava Devi, be merciful to this servant today. Deliver me from my pain and give me a place in the boat of your lotus feet, so that I can be sure to cross the ocean of birth and death. You are Nityananda's energy, your devotion to Krishna, and you are my guru. Please give this servant the desire tree of your lotus feet. How numerous are the fallen souls that you have saved. So this fallen beggar as well seeks a place at your feet. There's a another great devotee, Krishnadas, who's written many different bhajans. And he has written one song glorifying all the different temples and deities in Vrindavan. And in that song, he prays for the mercy of Janava Devi and to be able to enter into the service of her. So, where to go from here? Janava Devi was actually, she traveled quite extensively throughout Bengal, throughout the whole area, and preached. She assisted Narottam Das Thakur in overseeing the festival at Kettari. Matter of fact, she was the main mahant. She was invited to be the presiding respectable personality. She oversaw directly the installation of the six deities that Narottam saw were installed that day at the request of his nephew, his cousin Santosh. And this was all done under her watchful eye, as well as supervising and personally participating in the cooking and the distribution of prasadam after it was offered to those deities. She herself insisted on overseeing how all the prasadam was distributed. And then after that was done, she oversaw the distribution of the prasadam to all the servers. And then, after that was done, she allowed them to serve herself. So, very much kirtan is always in the air. Very much enthusiastic about serving Vaishnavas, particularly in regards to distributing prasadam to them. All the different associates of Lord Chaitanya from Bengal were very happy to see that Janava Mata had attended this festival of Narottam's at Kettari. And the distribution of the katha, of the kirtan, of the prasadam, and everything that went on at this festival was all directly her direction. And Bhakti Ratnakar gives great credit to her for the success of this festival. She spent some time then traveling to different places, and one of the places was to Vrindavan. And then from Kettari on the way to Vrindavan, and she stopped in different places, different villages that may have been quite successful, but in many of these places there were atheistic unbelievers and criminals and dacoits, and she bestowed Krishna Prema to all these different personalities. When she arrived in Vrindavan, she was able to see the samadhi of Gauridas Pandit. Now, Gauridas Pandit, of course, you know, would be her uncle, because he was the brother of her father. So she went and had darshan there and was very, very much moved to tears at seeing this place. And while she was in Vrindavan, the leaders of the Vaishnava community there, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta, Lokanath, Bhugarbha, Madhu Pandit, all of them offered great respect to her and praised and appreciated her service very, very much. And they personally took her around to all the different main temples in Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govindaji, Gopinath, like that. When she went to Radhakund, she visited with Raghunath Das Goswami. And at that time, of course, Raghunath Das Goswami was incessantly, nonstop chanting the holy names of the Lord. And as a result, his body had become greatly emaciated. And she stayed there in his company for 3 days doing bhajan. And it mentions that while she was staying in Radhakund, she directly heard the sound of Krishna's flute while she was sitting on the banks of Radhakund one day. And she then took her bath there at Radhakund, and that place is known as Janavagat. It's very nicely arranged because, as you know, all the way around Radhakund, if you don't know, you should learn, but as you know, there's these stairs that go down, and everyone comes and takes their bath there. But a special place was arranged for Janavamata that had walls that went down on the side and a little platform, so she could go into the Radhakund privately and take her bath. Very, very nice place there. That place is right there next to the temple that honors her sitting place there at Radhakund. And it used to be that you could go into that place and also take bath in Radhakund there. I've done that a couple of times. But now the last couple of trips to Vrindavan, they've barbed wired off the entrance so you can't go down there. I don't know what the reason was, but at any rate. So returning after Vrindavan, she returned to Gaudadesh, and she arranged the marriage of Virabhadra, her stepson of Virabhadra, to Yarunandanacharya's two daughters, Srimati and Narayani. And Srimati and Narayani, both following the footsteps of their husband, Virabhadra, became disciples of Janavamata. So one day in her travels, she arrived at a very, very large village, and she made note of the very miserable condition of the residents there. And she reflected on how would it be possible for us, herself and her entourage, to make the lives of these personalities very glorious. Now, most of the residents in that village were offenders and atheists and criminals like that. And they were very accustomed by their own nature to ridiculing the Vaishnavas. And this particular group of them began ridiculing Janavamata and her associates. In the evening, the handful of Vaishnava Mahabhagavats in that village came to offer respects to Janava. And they worshipped her, gave garlands, performed arti like this. And these Pushandis, these offenders, they began very, very poorly and derisively speaking. We've made note of this wife of a Brahmana. These Vaishnavas that have come to her, they're very ignorant. Therefore, they're bowing down to this human instead of coming to our temple of Chandi Devi and bowing down to the demigods. Another one mentioned that, you know, if Chandi Devi gives her mercy to them, then all of these offensive Vaishnavas will understand her glories and worship her. So we can see their mentality. Another one put forth and said, how can these fools understand? You say if Chandi gives her mercy, but how can these fools understand? Neither this wife of a Brahmin nor the Brahmins that have offered worship have ever come before Goddess Durga. These Vaishnavas have committed offense to our goddess and therefore can never understand anything. So they're laughing amongst themselves and trading insults about this other group, the Vaishnavas, back and forth between them. And in the evening, they went to the temple of Chandi and did their so-called seva. And they requested that, Chandi Devi, you please bless us. This very night, we should kill all of these offending personalities. Only if they worship your lotus feet with their mind, body, and words would they be saved. So give us your blessings in this way. So this was their plan, that these persons have committed great offenses and only by their death will they be saved. So they put this idea forth to Goddess Chandi. So they all left and they went home, took their evening meal and then took their rest. And then they all had a dream. Every one of them in their individual homes had the same dream. And Goddess Chandi became very angry. She wasn't angry at the Vaishnavas. She was angry at the foolish demons. And her eyes in each of their dreams, they relate to each other later, her eyes were red like fire and her lips quivered in anger. And as she appeared in the dream to each of these offenders, she chastised them with very harsh words and she roared very loud like a lion. Oh, you wicked offenders! I will not tolerate any of your nasty activities towards the Vaishnavas. Instead, it is your heads that I will cut off. You are drowning in false pride and have lost all intelligence by blaspheming the all-worshipable pure devotees of the Lord. You do not know anything about this Brahmin's wife, as you call her. Know from me that she is the wife of Nityananda himself, Balaram Chandra, and is worshipable by all. Her name is Janava, and she is full of sweetness. Simply by uttering her name, all material miseries are removed. As a nice little remembrance. Simply by uttering the name of Janava Mata, all material miseries are removed. She is the dear wife of Nityananda, who himself is the manifestation of mercy, spontaneously distributing prema bhakti to all the jivas. There is no one who does not worship her lotus feet. All persons are glorifying her and therefore destroying the miseries of this material world by such glorification. And then Chandi Devi recited a verse. Nityanandam priyam prema bhakti ratna padayanim Shri Janeshwarim Vande Tapa Twaya Bari Uriyam. I worship Shri Janavat Ishwari. She is the wife of Lord Nityananda and the giver of the jewel of Prema Bhakti. She eradicates the threefold miseries of material existence. And then after reciting this prayer, Chandi continued in the dreams of these persons. If she bestows her mercy upon you, then your life will be happy. Otherwise, I promise you, you will only suffer. If you surrender to her, then you will escape my wrath. Otherwise, I will kill all of you. So imagine your worshipable deity appears before you and threatens your life if you don't do as she says. So after this manifestation, the dream goddess Chandi disappeared, and these wicked sinners, Pashandis and horrible, they all woke up in great fear for their lives. And when the morning arrived, they all met together again and conversed among themselves. And did she say, yes, she told me. And they all realized they'd all had the exact same dream. So they immediately went to see the exalted Vaishnava Mahants that were the entourage of Janava Mata. And they had tears in their eyes. And they begged for forgiveness again and again and again. We have committed a great offense. Please, please forgive us. You have come only to deliver atheists like us. Please eradicate all of our offenses. We take shelter at your lotus feet. Sri Ishvari Janava Devi will be pleased if we can make you happy. You have the ability to both give and receive bhakti. Please take us to Janava Mata. So they wanted the mercy of these Mahants, knowing that if the Mahants forgave them, then surely Janava Mata would forgive them as well. I mean, this is how it was, you know, for many of us in accessing our service to Srila Prabhupada. Many of us didn't get direct service, but we served those who served Prabhupada. So they began to pray to Janabhamata directly when they were brought before her. Goddess Chandi has told us that we cannot understand your tattva. Please be merciful and reveal yourself to us. Otherwise, how will we be able to take shelter of your lotus feet? Everyone knows that we are just wicked demons. If you deliver us, then your fame will spread all throughout the world as having delivered the most fallen of persons. So saying these prayers like this, and these Prachandis and offenders and demigod worshippers, they all threw themselves at the feet of Ishwari Mata. And seeing their pitiful condition, her heart was melted, and she bestowed mercy upon them. And when they received this unlimited mercy from Janabhamata, all these Prachandis became very happy. And after blessing all these heretics and fault finders and so on, Janava stayed in the village for 2 or 4 more days, it mentions in Bhakti Ratnakar, and continued preaching and spreading the message of devotional service. One last story. In one of her journeys, Janabhamata stopped in one village along the bank of the river. And in this particular village, there was a group of Yavana dacoits. These were thieves of the lowest caliber. And not only were they thieves of the low, but they were extremely dangerous. They would stop at nothing to get their goal. So seeing Janabhamata and her associates and seeing how all of these associates were worshiping Janabhamata, they assumed that she must have great wealth and is paying them to do this. So they decided that at night they would steal all the wealth. But first they sent a spy in. You go in and pretend to be one of the associates and associate with them and case the place, so to speak. So this spy went in and then came back and reported that, yes, they're all worshiping her. I didn't see it, but there must be great opulence there. And they have all done their Nam Kirtan and taken rest now, so it's the ideal time. So the head robber decided, okay, the second half of the night when it's the darkest, we'll all get all of our weapons, we'll get together and we'll run in force and attack this camp. Slaughter all the people and steal all the wealth that they have. So they got all together, they got all their everything, and they're ready. And, all right, it's time, let's go! And they start running. Now, the camp is a short distance. They're, you know, maybe from here to the Gurukula building, something like that, not so far. So they start running. And running. And running. And running. And running. And still running, and all of a sudden the sun comes up. And they realize, what happened? We didn't get anywhere. We ran all night and made no progress towards the goal of this camp. And then the leader realizes, oh, it's because we forgot to worship Goddess Chandi before we began our endeavors. So tonight we'll do it again, and we'll do all the worship properly. So the first half of the night they did all their worship of Goddess Chandi. Worship in means that we won't describe. And then the second half of the night, all right, everybody got their weapons, we're all ready, all right, let's go. And they start running. And running. And you can see where they're running towards. And so they couldn't get anywhere. And so the sun came up again, and they realized that there must be something very, very mystical. The leader told all the other thieves, he said, how is this possible? It is only due to our offenses to these Gaudiya sadhus. We have run all night in what should only have taken us a few moments, and we've made no progress at all. We're in the same place. I tell you frankly, this is the leader of the dacoit speaking, I tell you frankly, my heart is trembling out of fear, and I see only inauspiciousness for us in the days ahead. We have committed innumerable sins, and great punishment in hell certainly awaits us. But in my opinion, if we go to this encampment and approach Janabhamata and beg for forgiveness, she can give us mercy and save us. So together they took off all the bandits' clothing. I wasn't quite sure what that meant, but I guess like, you know, when, you know, if you're going to steal in the night, you dress in black, you know, like the ninjas, they do that. They dress in black and everything's covered except, you know, so they don't get noticed. So whatever they had done, they took all their bandit clothing off and put all their weapons away and, you know, got rid of everything. And they very humbly approached Sri Ishwara Devi. And upon seeing this pure devotee, Mother Janaba Mata, the dacoits began to cry and fell at her feet. And they begged and begged for her mercy. "We are simply notorious thieves. Please be merciful to us. If you will bestow your mercy on us, you will be praised throughout the world for delivering such lowly persons as ourselves." And after they offered this prayer, they became very silent, folded their hands, and tears rolled down their cheeks. It mentions they cried just like the rain. And Ishwari Devi, Janaba Mata, immediately looked at them, blessed them, forgave them, and gave them the understanding of Krishna consciousness. So in this way, you know, Janaba Mata, not only was she the most amazing of personalities, but in the same way, she was able to guide those that had no real qualification for devotional service. So in that sense, we can attribute her in similarity to Srila Prabhupada, who saved all of us who had no real qualification for devotional service. So we're quite a bit after the time, but we had quite a bit of information to cover. This, you should know, is just a drop of the pastimes of Janaba Mata. Bhakti Ratnakar gives great detail, and I encourage all of you to take time today and read more and more about the pastimes of Janaba Mata. So we'll finish there for today. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Madhu Pandit ki jai, Janaba Mata ki jai, and of course Hiranyakasipu boo.